Good morning. I'm calling to order this meeting of the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee. I'm Representative Dave Pinto, the chair of the committee. Welcome to members of the public who are with us. You'll be able to find our meeting materials on our committee website, and so I'd urge you to check that out. There's an agenda there and other materials. This meeting is being held pursuant to House Rule 10.01, which allows for virtual meetings of this type. At this point, I'm going to ask the committee legislative assistant to take the roll.
Morning, everyone. Representative Pinto, Chair.
Present.
Representative Pryor, Vice Chair.
Present.
Lead Franzen.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Dabney.
Present.
Representative Damuth.
Present.
Representative Juergens.
Juergens, present.
Representative Cotiza Watoon.
Present.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison, present.
Representative Wasilewicz.
Present.
Representative Wolgamott.
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Dosland. Members, because we had those three hearings, I guess it was 2 weeks ago now, we have a little bit of minutes catching up to do. So Representative Pryor, if you could move approval of the February 11th minutes.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Pryor. So members, again, these are the minutes from February 11th, 2022. Any additions or corrections? And not hearing any, make sure you unmute if you can, please. All in favor of approval of those minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that motion passes. So the minutes from February 11th are approved. And then Representative Pryor, the minutes from February 15th of 2022.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. So members, any additions or corrections to the February 15th minutes? And not hearing any, all in favor of approval, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, that motion passes as well. So we have our sets of minutes from February 15th approved as well. We have Chair Bernardi with us, and I love the higher ed to early ed connection here. Thank you so much for being with us to present House File 2655. And again, I'm going to ask Representative Pryor if you could move House File 2655 for referral to the Committee on Education Finance.
Oh, great. Yes, that is my motion, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. So, Chair Bernardi, welcome. So glad to have you. I think you got a couple testifiers as well. So please present your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It is an honor to be here and being in front of all these people who care so much, who care so deeply about the success of our students in the state. And it starts with our youngest learners, as you all know. Our best investments are with our long-term gains are made in investing early in our young scholars, as they call them, in the communities in which I represent. We really focus on preschool students. And with us today, we are going to have Dr. Heal with us from Freely Public Schools and Carl Brown from Moundsview Schools. And what I've learned working with my school districts is this is not an extra kind of bill. This is essential. Investing in our youngest learners, the word I learned of the day is essential. And so I would like to ask the committee to make this permanent. This is one of the best investments we can make in our state. We've been coming back for the last two bienniums to make these seats continue, and now it's time to make them permanent. And I appreciate my testifiers coming today, and I know they will articulate the amazing things they are doing in our schools and the importance of this legislation. So with that, I will, Chair Pinto, I'll let you call on my testifiers.
And Chair Bernardi, my one question is whether your testifiers will get into this or whether you want to, or whether I should have been. It's just to sort of explain a little more about what the, okay. Kind of the context of what the bill does.
Okay.
We can do that, however, whatever.
Okay,
you
well, yeah. Yes. Okay, Mr. Chair, I will. Well, I can follow up at the end, but I'll just say briefly, it's 4,000 voluntary preschool spots that are not grandfathered in under the first set of ones that went through, which were 3,160. And I'm getting kind of down into the weeds here now, but these I have to be renewed every 2 years because that's the trend that's been happening. And I don't know, Mr. Chair Pinto, what else would you like me to say about it?
No, that's helpful. Just want to make sure, I think, just for the context for members of the committee and of the public, that there are these 4,000 preschool slots that keep being scheduled to expire every 2 years. And that causes a lot of disruption and concern. And my understanding of your bill is to say, let's stop that. And let's make sure the 4,000 kids can keep on receiving preschool in our schools. Is that correct?
Yes. And Mr. Chair, if I could add one more thing.
Please.
Well, and it's like waiting till, you know how the legislature works, waiting till the nth hour to find out if these opportunities are going to be there for our students is very challenging to families and to our school districts. And let's just get it done and so that they can plan accordingly and be able to have the most robust and easy to apply program than waiting till finding out at the nth hour if it's going to be funded or not.
Terrific. Well, thank you, Chair Bernardi. So I think your first testifier, it sounds like, is Dr. Heil, perhaps. And so if that's correct, we'll have Dr. Heil identify yourself and then please present your testimony. Well, we need to get you unmuted.
Yes, hi. Good morning. Thank you, Chairperson Pinto, and good morning, everyone. Oh, you okay? Okay. Thank you, Chairperson Pinto, and good morning, everyone. I'm Vice Chair Pryor, as well as Representative Schools. On behalf of our young scholars and families here in Fridley, I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak. To enough to be a recipient of the VPAK funding since 2017, with an original allotment of seats. We also received slots in 2018-19 for a total of 114 seats, and in 1920, we received a total of seats for the 2021-22 school year. These VPK seats have provided as for many children to attend a preschool that otherwise would not have had that opportunity.
Dr. Heil, we're...
Over the past 5 years, 47% of our families qualify for VPK. Yes.
We're having you... You're cutting out quite often and then really speeding up, having some trouble with your connection.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Chair, would you mind, or Representative Bernardi, I'm going to try to switch over.
Yeah, maybe if we can try to have you connect, maybe even by phone, perhaps, or maybe just try turning off your video first. See if we can, we hear you now?
Mr. Chair, can we
hear me, Chair Pinto?
Yeah, we're still having the same kind of troubles. Chair Bernardi had a suggestion.
I'm just wondering if during doctor's testimony, if we can just all turn off our video while we listen to her so that we can, maybe that'll help. I'm not sure.
We can give that, I don't know if it would help from our end to turn
okay.
turn our, yeah. But Dr. Heil, I wonder if maybe what we do is have, Mr. Brown go, and then we'll maybe have you log off and back on and then give that a try if that's okay. And maybe even have you come in, you could come in through the phone number perhaps.
That sounds perfect. Thank you, Chair. I'll switch computers.
Yeah. Okay, good. Okay. Thank you, Dr. Heil. Yeah, we'll see you soon. So I think we have Mr. Brown up next. And so if you could please identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Great. Thank you, Chair Pinto. My name is Carl Brown. I'm the Director of Community Education for Mountains View Public Schools. And I'm here today to, testify in support of School Readiness Plus funds. In our district, we've been recipients of these funds through the application process. We have 100 seats that help our, most of our underserved and kids that normally wouldn't have preschool opportunities. So we've been very grateful and thankful for having these seats available. They've been serving families that really often don't know about the programs that are available and have financial barriers and sometimes other barriers that may prevent them from accessing high quality programs. And then when I talk about high quality programs, it's also something I very much support, the idea of having licensed staff and certified staff. So we make sure we put high quality and capable staff members in front of our kids that need it the most. Permanent funding also allows registration and recruitment of students, like Representative Bernardi had shared, during the time when we normally would do that. So typically in a preschool setting, January and February, right, this time of the year is when registration would open, families want to lock in what school would look like. Because right now preschool is optional for families, it's really something where they're making these decisions early rather than having to wait. Unlike K-12, where they just assume if you're a first grader, you'll move on to second grade the next year. And it's really not a whole lot of a process. The assumption is you're going to come. So having those opportunities available allows registration to open. It allows us to really be equitable in the process of making sure that we're providing early learning opportunities for all of our students and making the same resources available at the same timelines. And really a lot of that involves the placement of classes, how many students would be in classes, and then having the appropriate numbers of staffing, which is teachers and paras in many cases, plus special education services as needed. And so having that same timeline really puts us into the typical budget cycle that we would have during the school year when we are going through the rest of our staffing processes. And for school districts, we try to lock that up towards the end of the school year. And so a challenge has been if it's under legislative funding timelines, we may not know until the end of the session or in some cases, even into the summer, which creates a challenge. And really the challenges for districts is we either have to kind of hedge a bet that we are going to receive the funding and we place accordingly. And if it comes in, great. And then we have students that we've identified and placed into classes. And if we wait, it really is something where we would have to wait until the time would be knowing that. And then there's not a lot of time in the summer to identify families and do that. And one of the last things we'd want to do is recruit families and share with them the values and benefits of preschool and to turn around and have to tell them we're not able to serve them because we don't have funding for them. So having that locked in funding would allow us to have conversations and really have the outreach that would be necessary for that. And from an equity perspective, which we have been working a lot in our district, is something that we want to have these opportunities available and know that not all students have the same opportunities. The scholarship programs have really been a great tool and a great piece to be able to provide those opportunities and help people understand them. And having permanent funding would allow us to continue those outreach efforts on an ongoing annual basis so that we start recruiting students and their siblings that may be coming to us the next year or the year after, and really working with families in a more coordinated way. With that, having that, the budgeting piece too, is something that it really reduces some of the risk. It's something that if we would serve families without the funding, our early childhood programs would have to come up with the funds, which we just don't have the budget to do. And so really having that as an opportunity to make sure we can serve all of the families we have. There are other benefits we have, but those are kind of a summary in the time we have available. Very supportive of the funds, and it's been extremely helpful for the 100 seats we've had in our district. So thank you for the committee and the support of the legislature to provide this for our students.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Right at the beginning of your testimony, you used a phrase that I just want to make sure that folks, especially members of the public, understand. You said school readiness plus, and that's the name for these 4,000 preschool seats that are expiring and the bill proposes to make permanent. So just want to make sure. Yeah, no, that's good. I don't think we'd used that phrase before. I want to make sure folks understand it. So good. So thank you so much. I see we have Dr. Heil back on, so we'll give another try. I suspect the storm is not helping connections here. So Dr. Heil, we'll bring you back up and then please, we might want to have you just start from the beginning with your testimony because it's sort of cutting out, and please proceed.
Thank you so much, Chair Pinto, and thank you, Carl, for covering me while I switch computers. So good morning, everyone. On behalf of our young scholars here and families in Fridley, I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to each and every one of you this morning. Fridley has really been fortunate to be a recipient of VPK funding since 2017, where we received allotment of about 68 seats. Since then, we've also received additional slots in 18-19 of 114 seats, and in 1920 of 145 seats. We again were allocated 145 seats this current school year. Our VP seats have provided, as Representative Bernardi was saying, essential and needed opportunities for many of our scholars to attend preschool who would have not had the opportunity to do so. Over the past 5 years, 47% of our families have qualified for free and reduced lunch, And for 2021-22, 57% of our families have qualified. Also in 21-22, of those families that attend, 35% of our families have a home language other than English. Additionally, in 2021-22, we're currently serving 40% Black African American, 31% White American, 5% multiple races were identified, 13% Asian, 10% Hispanic, 1% American Indian. And Fridley, our preschool and our number one focus is to ensure that our young scholars are prepared for success in kindergarten. That's our goal. Fridley Public Schools is an international baccalaureate program, and we are the only E through 12 IB continuum in the state of Minnesota. Our program is inquiry and play based. So Fridley has had several parent aware rated early childhood program recognitions. As a school program, we are very intentional in reaching out to our families for VPK. All of our families are able to register. However, we do prioritize giving it to students based on need. So at Fridley Public Schools, we're very good at blending our funds. So in order to maximize the amount of preschool kids that we can serve. So for example, we use school readiness, we use special services and BPK funds for a total of 160 total four-year-old preschool seats available this year. Our current enrollment is 135 students due to reduced enrollment due to COVID pandemic, but this is an increase from 117 from last year. For our three-year-old scholars who use school readiness program, 34% of our kids receive a pathway scholarship. 72% of our students pay either no fee or qualify for a reduced rate on a sliding fee. 25% are African American, 69% are white, 3% Asian, 3% Hispanic Latinx. So when one of our funding streams is removed or reduced, the program has to adjust, and this will reduce our ability to serve our families. So this would be a significant reduction in Fridley's four-year-old preschool program. And this will put the burden of the cost on a parent's shoulders, many of which you cannot afford to do so. So it's very important to us, and I thank you for listening today, to continue success of our VPK program, to remain strong by having us funding fully intact at its current funding level. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Heil. And I think we could see and hear that very well all the way through. So good stuff with the connection. Thank you, and thanks for your work. And I should have thanked Mr. Brown as well for his work with our young kids and our young people. And I think we do have a third testifier for you, Chair Bernardi. Jody Wambeke, I hope I'm saying your last name correctly, but please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson Pinto. Jody Wambeke, Wilmer Public Schools Early Childhood Programs Manager. On behalf of young children and families around the state, thank you for the work you and the committee are doing around early education. I'm testifying today to support the bill to make BPK and SRP seats permanent. And thank you, Representative Bernardi, for her advocacy work on this bill. Wilmer has been fortunate enough to be a recipient of BPK funds since 2017, with the allotment this year of 120 seats. Over the last 2 years, we have seen a significant uptick in the needs of our children. With the increase of needs, it is more important than ever to have year-to-year consistent preschool funding and programming that is hands-on and developmentally appropriate. This type of programming lends itself to children building the strong foundations they need for learning. Ensuring that our program reaches the children that would benefit most from preschool, we rely heavily on our cultural liaisons as our first connection to many of our families, especially shift work parents or families who utilize family friend neighbor care or legally non-licensed care. Our liaisons have worked hard to bridge the gaps in our Somali and Latino communities to build those relationships that continue from preschool throughout a child's school career. Of the 150 pre-K children we're currently serving, we have 62% of our kiddos receiving free and reduced lunch, and 65% are a race other than white, not of Hispanic origin. And as the school-based early learning program in Wilmer, we work closely with providers in our community to support children and families to ensure our children are prepared to be successful learners. Wilmer has several parent aware rated early childhood programs, from private preschool to childcare centers or family childcare. And what that means for us as a school-based program is that we're very intentional in our outreach to families who enroll in VPK. All families can register, however, we do prioritize based on need. And we work very closely with our ECFE program to provide parent support through ECFE classes outreach or our parent partner program that aligns a parent educator with families who need additional support. Like Fridley, we also blend and braid our funding streams in Wilmer to offer the programming that we do. And if one of the streams is removed, we have to readjust and put the burden of the cost onto the parents, which would most would be unable to afford the cost of tuition, which would then unintentionally widen the achievement gap. And having that consistent funding helps ensure families are able to access programming that is hands-on and developmentally appropriate that will support children in being a successful learner. Thank you, Chairperson Pinto.
Thank you so much, Ms. Wombeck, and for your work with young kids in your community, our state as well. So Chair Bernardi, I think we're going to move to the public testifiers now, unless anything to add at this point. I'll give you both last word when we're all done anyway. So I guess we'll move to that. So I believe we have Ms. Pringle, I believe. So if you can please identify yourself and proceed. There we go.
Good morning, Chair, committee members. My name is Kulia Pringle, and I am with the National Parents Union, and I work with families across the state one-on-one as they navigate the education system. And I'm here to voice their support for the bill. Having high-quality early childhood programming is very, as the representative said earlier, essential, critical, and needed in the family, with the families that I work with on a daily basis. And having these programs, as we all know, increases the likelihood of many children having a very good pathway towards a K-12 program. Many Black and Latino children miss the opportunity to have access to high quality state-funded preschools. And a lot of times it's due to systemic racism that causes the gaps that for Black and Latino children experience, which makes it, again, essential and of high importance for families to have access to opportunities and pathways to success for K-12. Making funding permanent, again, is essential, crucial, critical, and needed. And if funds are permanently made, we are actually showing our families that our children do matter. Thank you.
Pringle, thank you very much for your testimony. So I think members, we're going to move to questions and discussion at this point, unless I'm just making sure. I know there's one other person that signed up, but I think is not on right now. So I'll have staff let me know if that person is able to join. But members, we will be voting because, and I should probably explain that although this area of preschool is within our committee's jurisdiction, the funding for this proposal, if it were to advance, would be in the general education formula, which is under the jurisdiction of Chair Dabney's committee. And so the plan is to pass that on his committee. And speaking of which, Chair Dabney has his hand raised, and so I'll call on him.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. And I mostly just want to thank Chair Bernardi for bringing forward this bill. The testifiers have done an excellent job of establishing the need for families and the need for districts. If members and the public listened, making these 4,000 seats permanent is simply good stewardship of our responsibility as a legislature. Districts, you know, Mr. Brown was very clear on this, need to be able to plan. Staff members need to be able to plan. Families need to be able to plan. And when you think of who these families are, these are our youngest learners. That also usually ties to the most anxious parents about what is my kid going to be doing in the fall? Are they going to be safe? Are they going to be learning? Are they going to be in a rich environment? And that's what the schools promise. And that's what the legislature has consistently failed to follow through on our responsibility and our promise. As the House, we took making these 4,000 seats permanent into conference committee last year, and then when we were forced into special session, into the working group, to the final point, and the Senate refused to stand up to this responsibility. It's time we do. We have the resources. We know how disruptive the pandemic has been, particularly for our youngest learners who need both the academic and the social experience of pre-kindergarten to be ready for that big kindergarten move. The need is there, the resources are there, the responsibility is there. It's well past time that we step forward and take on the responsibility that we have. Chair Bernardi, thank you. Chair Pinto, thank you. I look forward to receiving the bill in the K-12 committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Representative Katiza Witoon, you're up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Bernardi, for bringing this bill forward. This is something that I'm really passionate and supportive of, and I would go out on a limb to say that this bill doesn't go nearly far enough. We love to talk about in this committee the differences in regulatory environments between state to state, and one of the favorite examples is our neighbor across the Mississippi, the St. Croix, Wisconsin, where I grew up, and I want to take a minute, which I don't get to do very often, and just give a shout out to Wisconsin from the rooftops, because Wisconsin not only provides 4,000 preschool slots for four-year-olds, they have four-year-old preschool written into their state's constitution. This happened in 1848. 95% of the state's eligible school districts offered 4K in 2015. That's the most recent year that I have statistics from, but something along the way, their school districts can opt to offer a part-time program versus a full-time day for four-year-olds. And I actually worked in one of those part-time programs. So those school districts receive about equal to half the support that they receive for older students. And I think that it's important that we provide consistent funding for the 4,000 students and districts that qualify for this program. But I think it's important that we consider and continue to have the conversation about providing four-year-old kindergarten for all the students in the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Katiza Witoon. Representative Bennett, you're up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a question for the bill author or anyone else who'd like to chime in. But I'm just curious, so with K through 12, we don't fund a grade level, say first grade. We fund by student, and we don't have guaranteed funding for a first grade classroom. Again, it's by pupil count that the funding comes in. So why are we doing it differently for the pre-K? But I'm just curious about that.
And Representative Bernardi, call on you, and certainly if you want to bring in staff as well, whatever works. Representative Bernardi.
Yeah, I would be happy to bring in staff, but I would also be happy to collaborate and have this be a part of our K-12 formula system so that all students can participate. So if you could call on staff, that would be excellent.
And I think, and as I do, I think Representative Bennett, that the way that this works is that each young kid is not actually worth a full student. They're worth 0.6. So the idea is that they actually, at the very least should have that, but maybe we can have staff help first, just help provide the context for Representative Bennett's question.
Mr.
and
Chair,
kind of understand how. Oh, please. Oh, Representative Bennett.
Can I clarify my question? So my question thank you so much, Mr. Chair. My question isn't so much, why aren't we incorporating them in like part of K-12? But my question is, for the way we're funding this, the way we fund K-12, whether it's at a 0.5, 0.8, 1.2, or whatever the different weights, we are funding them by student. We are not guaranteeing them that they will get enough funding for 25 students, let's say. And so with pre-K, to me, it should be targeted funding per student instead of saying, we'll fund your classroom to this point. Does that make sense? I'm trying to get a handle on this.
Yeah, and maybe I'll just, Representative Bennett, just to make sure I'm understanding. I mean, if a student is in first grade, it's true it's not guaranteed a grade, but the district gets money for that student being in first grade. And right now the student is in pre-K, the district doesn't get any money for the student being in pre-K. I see Chair Dabney raised his hand, and maybe since he understands the nuances of finance, Representative Bennett, is that okay if we have Chair Dabney take a cut? Okay, Chair Dabney, please.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and Representative Bennett. I think the key distinction here is in starting in kindergarten, we fund the need. In pre-kindergarten, we don't fund the need. So Moundsview, you know, Mr. Brown can speak, but they may have, I believe he said they get 100 seats. He can correct me if need be, but they may get funding for 100 seats and have 125 families apply. If it's kindergarten, we fund those 125 families. It's only in pre-kindergarten that we don't, that we refuse to fund the need. So, you know, taking your idea here, we would simply expand the K-12 formula to include pre-K. And certainly if you wish to author the bill, I would be glad to grant you a hearing. But that's the difference. Bennett. We don't fund the need.
Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, President Bennett.
Yeah, so I guess I feel like if we went to the scholarship method of funding pre-K, we would fund the need, because if there were more students in a particular area, each would have that scholarship available. My point here, let's put more money into scholarships so we can fund the need. And if there's, more students than there are slots, that would help open up those slots. But if we simply fund the program, and in some areas, perhaps those slots don't fill up or they go to families who can afford to pay for their children, we really need to target on the need. And so I agree with you, Chair Dabney, that targeting the need is critical, but I see that happening through the scholarships versus just putting the money into the programs. I guess that's the point I'm making. I'm not advocating to create a new grade level by any means. I just feel like scholarships do fund the need. Let's put the funding into those targeted kids that really need it, and not just fund the program. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bennett, I'm going to go back to Chair Dabney. Sounds like he has something he wants to say in response to you, and we'll let you go back again if you want to. But Chair Dabney, or something else on this?
Thank you, Chair Pinto. And Representative Bennett, we have a responsibility to make sure that need is able to be met. And where the scholarship structure fails is it doesn't assure families, particularly in greater Minnesota, where the school district may be the only pre-K provider in town. Many of our smaller communities rely on these VPK slots to be able to provide, to meet the demand in their community. The scholarship programs don't do that. We don't say in first grade, well, good luck, parents, finding a first grade teacher. We say, here's your community school. Here's the funding for it. Hope your kid has a great experience. We should be saying the same thing at pre-kindergarten. Here's the structure. We've provided for it. Come on in. And that's the strength of the VPK program that in contrast to the scholarships. Thank you.
Megan, Representative Bennett, I suspect you may want to hop back in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We'll take one more step, and then I'd like to move on to other aspects of VPK, but please.
Thanks so much, and good conversation. And Chair Dabney, I appreciate hearing your thoughts. I just, all the early childhood providers that we have around the state who aren't part of VPK, the private ones and those that partner with the districts that sometimes and so on, they don't have a guaranteed funding either. They need to help draw kids to their programs, and hopefully kids who have those scholarships could attend those programs. So again, I feel like the scholarship puts the power in the hands of the parents and the families to choose the program that best fits their need, instead of simply saying, let's just fund this program and hope they'll all come to it. I guess it's a whole different philosophy, and we could have a long, long discussion on this, Mr. Chair, but we won't now. But thank you for allowing that discussion. Appreciate it.
No, thank you, Representative Bennett. And it certainly does connect with the bill. I'll note before moving on to Representative Damuth how good it is from my perspective that we are, in fact, acknowledging that there is a huge need to make sure that young kids are ready for life. We need a big increase in funding for approaches. There's some discussion debate we're right now having about the precise way of doing that. But to my mind, that's the first step, is to recognize there is, in fact, a big need. Representative Damuth, you're up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the bill's author, just a qualifying or a confirming question for me to make sure I understand this. So voluntary pre-K, the VPK, is there a means testing to identify need? As we're talking about the need and the number of slots and the number of availability, we know we need to serve kids. My understanding is the School Readiness Plus does identify need and kind of prioritizes there, but does VPK do the same thing?
Chair Bernardi.
I will need to call on staff to answer that question.
And just as we do that, I just want to make sure that I'm clear on your question, Representative Dameth, and for others as well, that technically School Readiness Plus is the name of these continuing 4,000 seats that Chair Bernardi bill is about, and voluntary pre-K is the name for the ongoing, I think it's 3,100 seats. And you're asking about the ongoing 3,100 seats, is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair, thank you.
Okay, good. So let's have, first of all, Ms. Mock, just answer the question if you can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Dameth. So the School Readiness Plus program, so the 4,000 ongoing seats, does require that a child meets certain at-risk factors in order to be eligible for the program. The VPK, the 3,160 seats, does not have that requirement written into statute.
Representative, actually, maybe just quickly, Ms. Mock, those VPK slots, my understanding, though, is that they are aimed at schools that perhaps have a higher population of lower income children. Could you just expand on that a bit before I send it back to Representative Dameth?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. That's correct. So the way that the VPK funding is allocated is that it's funded among four different regions within the state. And then within those regions, the funding is prioritized for sites with more kids who qualify for free and reduced price lunch.
Okay, so there is a certain amount of targeting of the VPK money to lower income kids. Hopefully that was helpful, Representative Dameth, but please sending it back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Mock, for the clarifying of that. I think as we're looking at this, when this is ongoing, even though we're targeting schools that may identify a little bit differently, I think we really need to make sure that we are targeting the kids that need most, that need the services most. So if we are, if it's a first come, first serve, or however we fill those slots in VPK, I think we really need to do a better job of specifically targeting kids that maybe do meet or identify in those certain risk factors to make sure that we're doing the best for individuals rather than just the program. That's all I have, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dameth. And I do want to clarify, though, your question was about the 3,100 ongoing seats. That's not actually what the bill's about. The bill is about the 4,000 seats that are expiring, which, you know, that are means tested and are aimed at those vulnerable kids. I just want to make sure in case, and Representative Dameth or anybody else, please correct me. Yeah, Representative Dameth, I'll call on you. Just, I want to make sure, that's my understanding, is we're not actually talking about the 3,100. We're talking about the 4,000 that are means tested.
Yep, understand that, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. All right, thank you. Okay. Any other questions that the members have? I don't see any other hands up. And so Representative Bernardi will give you the final word as the bill author before we move to a vote.
Well, I want to thank my testifiers today who came and the great job they do in educating our students and all of our members who are on this committee that are working hard for our youngest learners. And so with that, I ask for your support to help our students and our schools be able to be planful and be able to provide these opportunities to help our students ongoing and make this funding permanent. Thank you.
Good. Okay. Thank you, Chair Bernardi. Thanks for your work. And with that, Representative Pryor renews her motion to refer House File 2655 to the Committee on Education Finance. I'll ask the clerk to please take the roll.
Representative Pinto, Chair.
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Pryor, Vice Chair.
Aye.
Pryor, aye. Lead Franzen.
No.
Franzen, nay. Bennett.
Bennett, no.
Bennett, nay. Representative Bolden.
Bolden, aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Daniels.
Daniels, no.
Daniels, nay. Representative Davney.
Davney votes aye.
Davney, aye. Representative Dameth.
Dameth, aye.
Dameth, aye. Representative Juergens.
Juergens, aye.
Juergens, aye. Representative Cotiza Watoon.
Aye.
Cotiza Watoon, aye. Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Representative Wazlowick.
Wazlowick, aye.
Wazlowick, aye. Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, aye.
Wolgamott, aye. Vote results in 10 ayes and 3 nays.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. With that, the motion passes. The bill is on its way to Education Finance. And members, we're going to continue having discussions, I know, about different funding approaches and all. I really appreciate the discussion and the recognition that there is just a huge need in getting kids off to a great start, and really appreciate your work, Chair Bernardi, as we send them up through Education Finance to your work in higher ed and get our kids ready. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and members.
Thank you. And thanks to your testifiers as well, to all of them, for your work for our young kids. Really appreciate it. So with that, we are moving on to House File 2660. This bill will be laid over, but for now, I'm asking Representative Katiza Witoon, the bill's author, to move House File 2660 to place it before the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would move House File 2660 to be before the committee for consideration for inclusion in a possible district report or committee report, excuse me.
Excellent. And please, Representative Katiza Witoon, present your bill and then we'll bring in your testifier.
Thank you. So members, House File 2660 is an appropriation for our Head Start statewide programs, and it just modifies the distribution a little bit. What it does is provide dedicated and sustained funding to ensure that Head Start can continue to serve families with young children by increasing funding by $5 million each year. So this additional funding will allow programs to expand their early Head Start services, and it dedicates 10.72% of the annual Head Start allocation to tribal Head Start programs. This is also included in the governor's budget recommendations. But as we know in this committee, early Head Start and Head Start serve all of Minnesota's 87 counties with comprehensive early childhood and family development services to families that are living at or below the federal poverty level between the ages, between prenatal and age 5. So they're providing school readiness services for low-income families to support these children's growth and development, and services kind of run the whole gamut between early learning, health development, and family well-being. So it's really critical, and I know that there are a few testifiers today to discuss the importance of this, and so Mr. Chair, I would ask that you call on the testifiers for their input.
Certainly. So we have Dr. Lockhart Feindling. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing your last name correctly, but if you could please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Representative Chair Pinto and committee members. Yes, that is a correct pronunciation of my name. I am Dr. Mary Lockhart Feindling, and I am the director of the Head Start program at United Community Action Partnership. And we are located in 9 counties in central southwest part of Minnesota. We include the cities of Hutchinson, Wilmer, Marshall, Jackson, and everywhere in between. We enroll 599 Head Start and Early Head Start students. Early Head Start, as noted, serves children from prenatal up to 3 years old. And our program operates 11 Early Head Start home-based programs, as well as 8 Early Head Start classrooms. We have a capacity of 185 children in our Early Head Start program at this time. 68 of those 185 seats are state-funded, and the other 117 are federal funded. We serve very diverse communities in our area, with 33% of our enrolled children and families speaking a home language other than English. As of today, we have, and I just checked this morning, we have 145 children on our wait list in our Early Head Start program. So again, Early Head Start is the prenatal up to 3. So we're also, based on the expected state funding for fiscal year 2023, we're expecting to see a loss of about $18,000 with the state allocation formula. We also incorporate a grow our own teacher training program to obtain a child development associate, commonly known as a CDA. A teacher forgiveness program would be the next step in assisting our potential teachers to be degreed. Early Head Start is imperative to our communities, making large impacts on both child and family outcomes. Our Early Head Start programs provide intensive, comprehensive child development and family support services to our low-income families. Early Head Start nurtures healthy attachments between the parent and child and promotes physical, cognitive, social, and emotional development. The last couple years, we are seeing our children entering our program with a far more delayed physical development and lower social emotional skills than we have ever seen in the past. However, our children are making tremendous progress across all those learning domains. Early Head Start also assists our parents in meeting their own personal goals and achieving self-sufficiency across a variety of domains, including housing stabilization, continued education, health and nutrition needs, and financial security. At United Community Action, one of our goals, based on our data, has been to increase the social capital of our parents and connecting parents to their communities and other adults. We have made great strides in this goal despite being in the midst of a pandemic. This can be attributed to our Head Start and Early Head Start services remaining open to in-person learning and services. And of course, our home visitors and family service workers walking beside our families and making connections, including group socializations and family activities. Anything we can do to provide the same opportunities to those 145 children on our Early Head Start wait list will better our communities by providing more stability and improved outcomes for those low-income children and families. Thank you for letting me testify.
Thank you, Dr. Lockhart Findlay. I appreciate you being here. I think we've got, I think the next person up is Shanna Morse from the Department of Education. Representative Cotizza, you can jump in if there's anybody else, but we'll have you, Ms. Morse, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Shanna Morse. I am the Assistant Director of Government Relations at the Minnesota Department of Education. And I'm here this morning to testify in support of the 10.72% set aside for the Tribal Head Start programs in House File 2660, a proposal, as the bill authors mentioned, also included in the governor's budget, in fact, for the past 2 years. So we know that Head Start and Early Head Start programs play an important role for many young children from low-income families when it comes to school readiness, early learning and health, and just general family well-being. In order to participate, families must be below 100% of the federal poverty guidelines, be eligible for public assistance, experiencing homelessness, or the child must be in foster care. And so the children served by these programs benefit greatly from them, and we believe it's important that we support the program's ability to provide these services and accomplish the things that they do. Currently, Minnesota statute distributes Head Start funding across all programs proportionately based upon the federal allocation. So this means that when there are changes in federal funding allocations, it impacts all programs' share of the state Head Start funds. As federal Head Start investments have increased over the past few years, with a greater proportional share of those increased funds going to non-tribal programs, many tribal Head Start programs have experienced reduced state funding allocations. As you can imagine, when funding is unpredictable or it decreases, it can be difficult for programs to manage and can inhibit program growth. So this proposal to modify the funding formula will provide more consistent state allocations for the state's 8 tribal programs from year to year, which is critical to supporting their long-term success. And ensuring more consistent funding allocation supports their ability to be stable and provide them with the increased opportunity to grow their enrollment and serve additional children and carry out the important work that they do. And then a final note that I would want to add here is it's our understanding that the set-aside proposal is coming to you with agreement from all impacted groups. MDE staff participated in conversations with the Minnesota Head Start Association and the Tribal Head Start directors over the past several years. And so we're happy to be able to say that as well. With that, I conclude my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Morse. And I just want to clarify for myself and on behalf of others too, that as you had said, that the 10.72% set aside is contained in the governor's budget. And then also in this bill that we're considering, the difference is this bill would then also have an additional appropriation for Head Start as well. Is that, Ms. Morse, I see Representative Cotizza Watoon, the bill's author, nodding. And Ms. Morse, is that that's your understanding too?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. The governor's budget took just a little bit of a different approach in terms of resourcing Head Start with our a little bit more expansive pre-K proposal, which provides some seats to those programs.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Morris. And that's actually a nice connection with the first bill. I should have noted that. But we're hearing several proposals from members of legislature that parallel or connected with in some way with administration proposals, this being an example. And that first bill as well, the administration has a broader pre-K proposal, which we'll hear at another time. And so, yeah, thank you for that clarification. Ms. Pringle, I think that you're up next again. I'm so glad to have you back just to identify yourself again and then please proceed if you're still on. I may be wrong about that, though. You may have hopped off. So, okay, well, perhaps not then. And then I know that we have Craig Radke from Minnesota Head Start Association, who I think was going to be on just to be answering questions. And we're so glad to have you. See you nodding. So members, we're now ready for questions on the bill, I believe. So see if folks have any. We've got Representative Juergens. You are up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a co-author on this bill, and I was also a co-author on House File 911 last year, which is very similar to this. I'm wondering if either Representative Kurtiza Watoon or someone could just walk through what are the differences in this bill versus House File 911, and what was the final result of where do we end up with House File 911? I believe it was laid over for inclusion. Could you just bring us up to speed on the results of that?
Great question, Representative Juergens. Yeah, Representative Kurtiza Watoon, we'll start with you, but certainly feel free to toss it off if you need to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Juergens, I appreciate your support for the Head Start programming that we provide here in Minnesota. And I think, you know, that's a really good question. I know Mr. Gratke is on online today, and they have brought forward this additional proposal for, I think, just a little bit of additional support in regards to some of the pandemic challenges that they've been facing. And if it's okay, Mr. Chair, I would ask Mr. Gratke to give us a little bit more of an update.
Yeah, and I know Ms. Mock is available as well. So we'll go to Mr. Gratke, and then Ms. Mock can fill in any details that we need to. So Mr. Gratke.
Thank you, Representative Pinto, Chair Pinto, and committee. And so the legislation last year ended in the Senate and nothing really happened there. And so we're back this year. And I think really we have some nuances this year that are a little bit different than last year, asking for less funding. And we've got a separate facilities request that's going through those committees. And so really coming out of the pandemic, we're looking at rebuilding programs, but also just this real need for early Head Start. And some of the testimony today is centered around pre-K, and the governor's bill is also very much a pre-K bill. It's not a 0-3 bill, a prenatal to 3 bill. And looking around our state and with our programs, and it's not just a rural issue, it's also a metro and urban issue, is there are very, very few infant and toddler spaces available. And we have the highest risk, most needy families coming to early Head Start and Head Start. We need the capacity to expand those programs and serve them. As Mary mentioned, her program has about 150 children on their wait list. Statewide, we probably have somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 children on our wait list. And that's in a COVID kind of situation where parents are very, very reluctant to send their children to group settings, particularly children that don't have access to vaccines. And that may have some health risks. So, you know, that's given our current situation. What I would say too is we have the capacity to do this, currently with staffing and programming. We do need the facilities ask as well. The pre-K spaces that we would be converting don't automatically convert to infant toddler space. So that's a whole other question for a different group, but there's also a need to do that. We've lost a lot of childcare outstate Minnesota, and it's been a real struggle for our families to get services.
I guess thank you, Mr. Gratke. I do want to, I feel like we need to get a concrete though answer to Representative Juergens' questions. I'm still a little bit unclear, so maybe Ms. Mock can help us. So what is the difference between HF 911 from last year and this proposal? If Ms. Mock, if you could help us with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So The difference, well, one thing that's the same between the two proposals is the 10.72% set aside for the tribal Head Start programs. And as Mr. Gracke explained, that was included in this committee's omnibus bill, but did not pass the legislature last year. The other difference between House File 911 as amended last year was that House file had $45 million over the base for each of 2022 and 23, specifically for the Early Head Start program. And it also included $17.5 million in each of 2022 and 2023, specifically for facility building within the Head Start program. And the bill that's before us today just has $5 million over the base for the Head Start program.
And Ms. Mock, Head Start as a whole, as opposed to targeted at Early Head Start.
Correct. Head Start as a whole.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you. So, Representative Juergens, that was a long, I'm sending it back to you finally.
No, I got what I was looking for. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, good. Thank you. Looking for any other member questions or comments? Not seeing any hands. So with that, Representative Katiza Watoon, we'll give it back to you for the last word on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, thank you, Representative Juergens, for that question. I know it's good to have the whole picture and that we had a lot of important conversations, obviously, in this committee last year on this programming and all the others that are available to our children in Minnesota. I think that Head Start and Early Head Start are a very big part of that. And I think that this is a good proposal to consider for inclusion, and I hope that the committee will support it.
Thank you, Representative Katiza Watoon. And I should probably note that that House File 911 is still in the possession of the committee, and so certainly we can continue to use that bill as we wish to when it comes to putting together a committee budget. We'll certainly be considering all those things later. Okay, well, so with that, House File, make sure I get the bill number correct, 2660 is laid over for possible inclusion in a budget bill. So moving on then to the third bill on our agenda, this is also yours, Representative Katiza Watoon, House File 3272. I invite you to move that, to place that before the committee.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Yes, I would like to move that House File 3272 be before the committee for consideration and for inclusion in the possible committee report.
And then please continue by sharing about the bill, and then we'll get to your testifier.
Wonderful. So members, House File 3272 will provide $450,000 to the Family Partnership to pilot their executive function curriculum to 15 sites across Minnesota. This curriculum uses a two-generation approach. You know, something that we talk a lot about in committee, how important it is not just to focus on the children, but to kind of help educate parents and the generations that are in the household so that really everyone can grow together. So this is targeted to help children between the ages of 3 and 5 and families who have experienced multiple ACEs or have experienced trauma in any form. So these sites do include rural, suburban, and urban early childhood settings that includes care providers like Head Start, but also preschool, home visiting programs, and to parenting groups in high-risk communities. So the Family Partnership, as a part of the proposal, will report to us by December 15th of this year, 2022, and then again on December 15th of 2023 on progress. So with me today is John Till from the Family Partnership to describe this pilot programming in greater detail. I know that it includes a really exciting partnership with some of the research that they've been doing out at Harvard. So I look forward to hearing Mr. Till's explanation and testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Till, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is John Till. I'm the Senior Vice President of Strategy and Innovation from the Family Partnership in Minneapolis. And there is a blizzard today, but I'm at our Four Directions Preschool at Bloomington and Lake, which is the only full immersion Dakota and Ojibwe language preschool in the metro area. And both that preschool and our Northside preschool, and you see here a young graduate of our North Minneapolis preschool, which is part of the Northside Achievement Zone, and his mom getting ready for school. Both are open today in spite of the weather. So I'm here to talk to you today about executive functioning across generations, which is a strategy to accelerate brain development in young children and their caregivers, and to buffer children against ACEs and toxic stress. In this work, on the left-hand side of the screen, you can see our major academic partners, Harvard Center on the Developing Child and their national R&D arm, Frontiers of Innovation. And at the University of Minnesota, we partner for evaluation with the Center for Early Education and Development, the brain science experts at the U, and with the Future Services Institute, who are sort of the leaders in 2Gen design and innovation in Minnesota. And on the right-hand side of the screen, our national partners, which include Ascend at the Aspen Institute, which is well-known as the national leader on 2Gen. And I'll point out Healthy Families America, one of the main home visiting models that is used in the state of Minnesota with families with young children. And so what we have with executive functioning across generations, our model is one intervention with three ways to deliver the intervention. The design is intended to buffer kids against the impact of ACEs and toxic stress. And as we know in Minnesota, 55% of Minnesotans have one or more ACEs, and a quarter of Minnesotans have four or more ACEs, which is what puts people at great risk for health conditions later in life, including diabetes, heart disease, anxiety, and depression and addiction behaviors. But the earliest impact of ACEs and toxic stress is on the healthy development of executive function and self-regulation skills in young children. It's in that 0 to 5 time frame that children's brains are developing most rapidly, and that their executive function and self-regulation skills are first being developed. And those are really 2-generation skills. They're important for kids to learn how to learn and to learn in school, to make friends, to develop social skills, get a job, keep a job later in life, and finally parent well. And so our curriculum was first developed in our therapeutic preschools by Dr. Chris Wing, who's a speech pathologist who worked for our organization for many years and is a graduate, got her PhD at the University of Minnesota. The curriculum, because executive function and self-regulation skills are language-based, the curriculum uses a language-based approach in which children learn internal state words used in self-regulation. So they learn the building blocks for self-regulation. They build skills in creating personal narratives about emotionally significant events, because it's by putting events that are emotionally significant into context using language that we're able to make different decisions about what would happen next time, ask for help, do things differently. And then finally, practice mindfulness skills that increase resiliency in kids. And the curriculum is a 2-generation approach. We're trying to engage both children, young children, ages 3 to 5 in particular, and their caregivers. And our model is designed for use in preschool and Head Start classrooms, in family home visiting programs, and in parenting group programs. With support from Harvard Center on the Developing Child, we were able to bring together partners who wanted to pilot the curriculum and some adaptations of it across 4 different states, and develop rigorous theories of change for both the core model used in preschools and the home visiting and parenting group adaptation. And the committee we'll have this in the testimony package, but the theory of change that Harvard has developed has the first column there, strategies. That is what the program actually does, which is to teach internal state words, to work with kids on personal narratives. And a lot of that is fun. That's reading stories, talking about stories with children. So reading books and through play activities. And so in building internal state words, building that language, being able to create personal narratives about emotionally significant events, and teach mindfulness skills even to young children. And then staff encourage parents to practice those EF skills at home with their children, and there's engagement opportunities for parents to learn about the curriculum and to build their own skills. So the next column is targets. That's what those would be, the first dominoes to fall when the intervention is working. And then finally, outcomes, which are the long-term changes in the curriculum. One of the key measures that we use to evaluate the curriculum is a tool that was developed at the University of Minnesota through Reflection Science called the Minnesota Executive Function Scale. It's a tablet-based app. It's a series of games kids play, and kids have a lot of fun with it, but it creates an age-adjusted executive function score for the kids, so you can do pre-post evaluation. Finally, Harvard's approach takes a look at moderators. Those are things that might increase or decrease the efficacy of an intervention, and those are really key in understanding the intersections between equity and the impact that an intervention is having. So our preschool model, kind of talked about it a bit. The idea is to deliver it in groups of, for groups of small children, 26 lessons, takes about 45 minutes a day. And that's broken up, that's songs, that's talking, those are fun activities. We teach kids the word yucky by having them stick their hands in yucky things and play with goo, that kind of thing. So books, songs, activities for parents. As we said, it's really bringing parents together so that they can learn about internal state words and personal narratives and really do serve and return with their kids around to build those skills with their children and recognize when their kids are using those internal state words so they can scaffold that use more. And with the home visiting adaptation of the curriculum and the parenting group adaptation of the curriculum, it's exciting because we've been able to really strengthen the parent component of that. And the focus of those interventions is really first with the caregiver and then the caregiver with the child. The goal with HF3272 is to scale this intervention to 15 sites in Minnesota, each one implementing at least one of the delivery approaches, whether that's preschool or home visiting or parenting group. And then engage sites across the state to ensure demographic diversity of the children and families that are participating. And overall, the goal is to accelerate brain science-informed innovation within early childhood and parenting programs with solid implementation support from our project team and with evaluation partners at the U who are already really experienced with the project models and can bring a lot of solid evaluation to the table. So that is my presentation in brief. And if there are any questions, Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Till. Maybe we can bring the presentation back to back down, and then we'll we can bring it back up if we need to. Members, of course, please raise hands. I might ask, what the longer term, well, first of all, my apologies, I may have missed this, but could you just talk, Mr. Till, a little bit about what executive functioning is? That's sort of just a bit, and again, I may have missed it, but I have my own sense of that, but if you could just share that fundamental point.
Sure. So if you remember why you're here today in this committee, that it's an early education committee holding an idea in your head. What are we here to do? That's one part of executive function, staying on track with something. This is something that a lot of programs, particularly programs that work with criminal justice populations, we often see that people who've had a lot of ACEs later in life have lost the ability to kind of bite their tongue and to pivot. So another aspect of executive function is being able to follow through with things. Another aspect is to inhibit what might be your dominant response and pivot in flexible ways. So it's really working memory, flexibility, and inhibitory control being the key elements of executive function. But these are really two-gen skills because you need them to be successful in school and develop healthy social interactions, but you also need them to keep a job, get a job, parent, all of these things. So they really cross generations.
Thank you. The metaphor I've often heard is it's kind of the air traffic controller of the brain, making sure the planes are landing when you want them to land. They're not crashing into each other. They're all kind of working. Yep, I can see Representative Katiza Watun is doing the on the ground motion with the flashlights. So my question just, and before I pivot to Representative Pryor, is just what the longer term goal is of this. You've got the plan as a pilot project, 15 sites around the state. You're going to report back to the legislature by the end of 2023. Is the hope potentially this is something that is then rolled out more broadly?
Yes, that's exactly the hope with this, that it's available more broadly to anyone who wants to use the model.
Okay, we'll see. I'll just see how that goes in the next couple of years. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I do have two different questions. One is to follow up what you were talking a little bit about the plan and the long-term plan. And related to that is maybe the body of research that you're basing this on and how you see this being implemented. Will you be looking for certain outcomes into the future rather than at the end of the program? But as they enter kindergarten, the first grade, second grade, third grade, and beyond, is that possible to track a child that's had this kind of support in the 3 to 5 range? And if that support is still having an impact on their lives years later.
Mr. Till.
Representative, prior to your question, where we would like to start is being able to follow up with children sometime after the post data for the intervention is collected to see how they're doing months later. We would love to be able to follow children years into the future and see how they're doing. That gets into very expensive evaluation. Some of that might begin to be possible with this bill. And one of the big challenges, of course, is where kids go after they leave a preschool environment.
Representative Pryor.
Okay, and just the research that it's based on, was there any longitudinal work done in that area?
So,
to your question, Representative Pryor, there's a good body of research on the development of executive function and self-regulation skills in children. Harvard is one place that aggregates that data. And if you Google core capabilities for life, you can bring up a lot of that data. With our project, we have been using this curriculum now for about 4 to 5 years. And we've been doing individual pilots both in Minnesota in our therapeutic preschools. And thanks to some funding from Harvard, we're in our second year of some large pilots with 2 Head Start centers in San Antonio, Texas. And we piloted the home visiting and parenting group adaptations in 3 other states, including Wisconsin.
Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And now I have a second question, if there is time at this point.
That's okay. Yep.
The second area that I'd like to hear more about is, you know, this understanding of the brain and executive functioning that is universal across cultures and language and all of those things, but then how you actually apply it and help a family acquire these skills is specific to the culture that you're working with and the family that you're working with. So in terms of how you're adapting to the diverse cultures that we have in Minnesota that you'd be serving, how are you incorporating that into the program?
Mr. Till.
Representative Pryor, that's a great question. And what we've been doing with each of the sites where we're piloting, including our North Side location, which primarily serves African-American children, and our Four Directions Preschool, which predominantly serves Indigenous children, and our pilots in other states, including the San Antonio pilots, which, as you might expect, are predominantly Latino families that we're working with there. Future Services Institute has been conducting sort of feedback sessions with both parents and with the staff who are delivering the curriculum to dig into exactly those questions. One of my dreams for this will be having having the opportunity in the future to map out internal state words in different languages, including Dakota and Ojibwe for our children here in Minnesota, but also in Spanish, because that's a very frequently used language, both in our own programs and in many others around the country.
Okay, I see Representative Pryor is now muted. Just before I go to Representative Damuth, Mr. Till, I didn't want to forget this. If you could send us the research, I know there's a lot of research underlying the importance of executive function, but if there's information about your particular, this particular curriculum and the impact that it's had, if you can be send that to us for circulating to committee members, I'd find that really helpful. So if you could do that after the hearing, thank you. Absolutely. And then Representative Damuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a question for the testifier, Mr. Till. Could you, and maybe I missed this, but could you just go over where those 15 pilot sites are planned for in Minnesota?
Mr. Till.
Well, my hope would be that we're able to recruit from across the state through some kind of open application RFP process that encourages programs in northern, central, and southern Minnesota, as well as the metro, to participate.
Representative Damon.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Till. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So those 15 pilot sites have not yet been identified, is my understanding. And we also know that the Parent Aware program probably is doing some of this within the work that on our, with the quality rating system, the programs that are quality star rated, either 1 to 4, they're probably doing some of this work too. So I look forward to following the work and the importance of the executive function with our youngest kids. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Damon. And I wonder if there's somebody who could clarify that point about the connection with Parent Aware. I know we have a couple folks from Department of Education who are on, they may be able to help, or Ms. Mock. Because I don't know that that is necessarily the case, Representative Damuth. I think there's some connection with executive function, but I don't know for sure. So is there anybody who's on who can help clarify that? Looks like Ms. Mock, you may be the one who has to try to help us with this. Can you just clarify in whatever way you can?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I am not able to clarify, but I can get back to the committee with an answer.
That'd be great. Yeah, if you could let us know kind of how Parent Aware connects with executive function. Representative Damuth, I don't know if there's any further question while you have the floor that you want to, in particular, have Ms. Mock clarify for us about this.
No, I guess a clarification, as Mr. Till went through and talked about, described what executive function was following your question, Mr. Chair, that is great information for all of our kids as they're in their youngest learning, able to follow through and to stay on track, to know what they're expected to do and when they're expected to doing. If we could get a clarifying information on Parent Aware, maybe that would be helpful going forward with the work that we do with them too. But I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to ask the question. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Damuth. And I suppose that's a good point. If we end up finding that there's not a lot of overlap, that may make us say, hey, wait a second, what's going on with Parent Aware? Because it does seem like a pretty important set of skills. So great question. So yeah, Ms. Mock, if you can look into that and report back to us, that'd be great. Thank you. Representative Juergens, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry, this has probably been covered. I'm trying to understand. I don't know how to ask the questions. I'll just say I'm confused why we need a $450,000 grant for a pilot program for a program that already works. I'm if I could get some clarification on that's what I'm kind of having a hard time understanding here. And I was trying to get that out of testimony, and if it was spoken, maybe I just missed it.
Yeah, Mr. Till's unmuted, so I didn't go, but of course, Representative Katizer, you can jump in too. But Mr. Till.
Yes, well, that the $450,000 covers the implementation costs at the site, which do include some technology such as tablets, training on using the Minnesota Executive Function Scale, access to the program materials, some sites like preschools may need release time for teachers to attend the curriculum. It also covers ongoing evaluation. I think talk to any evaluator, they will tell you that more data is always better than less data. particularly as you expand geography and ethnicities involved in an intervention and see what the differential impacts are. So it covers the costs of training staff to deliver the curriculum. It covers the costs of curriculum materials, including books, which go to children's books, which go to parents, evaluation technology that's used, costs of evaluation team involvement.
Representative Juergens?
So thank you, Mr. Chair. So is it not really a pilot program? It's more an expansion of an existing program, it sounds like.
Mr. Till?
I think it's both. We've done feasibility studies for the parenting group adaptation and the home visiting adaptation now, thanks to Harvard. So we've done one round of that. We know that we can implement the model with fidelity. We'd like to do more evaluation of those interventions, and scaling up of the preschool version of the curriculum has been extremely challenging during COVID. So I think engaging more sites, particularly hopefully as we come out of COVID now, there's more opportunities to evaluate on a larger scale, and that's really helpful.
Representative Juergens.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Juergens, it does occur to me that just because a program works well at one location doesn't necessarily mean it works well in different settings. I see Representative Blaswick nodding, so that may have been the point you were going to make. I can imagine that even if it's working extremely well this one site, before we would have it go at, you know, every place around the state, we might say, well, we want to test it out at a variety of locations and kind of see how it works there before we would then expand that much more, if that makes sense to you. Though that does give me a thought, Representative Blaswick, before I call on you, that the sentence right now says that the report is going to be on the progress made to expand the curriculum. And I guess, Representative Kikisa-Witun, I might suggest to you that if we do include this in the budget bill, we would want not just a report on the expansion, but an evaluation of how it's worked in these different locations, so we can decide what we want to do beyond there. So maybe a little more rigor in the evaluation. But Representative Wazlowick, you're up. And I'll call you on Representative Kikisa-Witun. I'll give you the last
word. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was really excited. So in my nerdy prevention science heart, I'm really excited to see this. I just actually sent an email to sign on to the bill. But I just want to thank Representative Kikisa-Witun for bringing this forward, and Mr. Till for being here to talk about it. And sort of echoing what you said, Representative Pinto, Chair Pinto, the translation from in different settings is sort of the thing here is we want to see if it works just as well in other settings. And to be able to do that, you have to actually try it in other settings, and that different things may impact those things. So I think the piece that I wanted to just remind members of and members of the public too is I think it was slide 4 where it has the outcomes and the targets and the moderators and those sorts of things. I think that's really a key piece of understanding, like, sort of the different settings and the different ways this program works. Because that slide in and of itself is like a great indicator of how much research has actually gone into this. Because in order for us to understand the moderators that have an impact on the program, that requires a ton of research to understand the different ways that the different factors can influence the program and how effective it is. So just wanna thank again Representative Kikisa-Witun and Family Partnership and Mr. Till. I think this is a really good program for us to be funding, and look forward to supporting the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wazlowick. So Representative Kikisa-Witun, will let you respond to any of that and have the last word, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, Representative Juergens, I think that is really a really great question that you asked originally, and I was going to kind of chime in to mention the geography. I think it's so critical that we do test these programs and curriculums all across the state to make sure that they're working as intended. And I think that when we examine the data that we'll be able to get back, and to Chair Pinto's point, we can definitely tweak the language as far as the reporting goes if we want to make sure that it's a little bit more all-encompassing when we get that information back, to consider how things went on some of the rural sites, how things went in the suburban areas, and then the additional sites in the metro area. I think that'll be really important information to get back. One of the one of the things that really drew me to want to carry this bill was just the targeting kind of about children who have faced adverse childhood experiences. And I think that this sort of ties into the bill that we passed or the proposal that we passed last year about foster care. And, you know, I mean, everyone in this committee knows my connection to the foster care system and really how those children have experienced so much trauma beyond their age. And and really, if we're able to support them in any way, kind of as early as we can to kind of allow them to regain some of those skills that they weren't potentially building in the earliest years of their life that we've talked about through this committee, how important that is. So I think that programs like this really deserve the time and attention that we can put in. And that if we're able to gather the data and then down the line expand so that all children and families who are dealing with some of these things are really able to kind of restructure those brain connections, and think that this will be really impactful on that. So thank you for the consideration. I appreciate the support.
Thank you, Representative Katizu-Watun. Thank you, Mr. Till. So a little bit of homework on this bill. We're going to get some information back. The research, Mr. Till and Ms. Mock will get us some information, and we may want to tweak the evaluation, but I think there's a real promise here. So thank you again for the bill. And members, I want to note that on Thursday, we're going to have a hearing on childcare and early learning in Greater Minnesota in particular. And so looking forward to that. And I don't see any hands with questions or comments or anything. So with that, I'll see you on Thursday. The meeting is adjourned. Thanks, everybody.